48 series. And before I forget, on Tuesday, that's going to be the next, not the next class period, but the class period after that, we're going to be meeting in here and we're going to be working on octave tutorials, okay? So what I'd like you to do is, if you have a laptop that you can bring, you know, that you have Octave on or MATLAB on, bring it to class on Tuesday next week, okay? And what we'll do is we'll get in little groups of two around the classroom and work on the tutorials. And I'll have, you know, some maybe a little extra problem or two for you to solve, okay, with Octave. So the or MATLAB.
Quick question regarding Octave. If you were having trouble plot, I tried some stuff and it wouldn't plot.
Were you using a Mac? Okay, so I need to work on that some more.
What version?
You're using 10.6?
Seven.
You're using 10.7?
Six.
Do you have the same problem?
Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah. Okay. There. If you do a little Google search, there is a place on the web that does have some instructions for trying to fix that problem. It worked last quarter for 10.6. We haven't tried it for 10.7, and I had difficulties that wasn't quite enough on 10.5. So let's see, you've got 10.7, you've got 10.6. Anybody else here have a Mac?
I got 6.
You got 6, okay, and you got 6?
I don't even remember what version I have.
Right.
I installed it so long ago.
Well, it works great on 10.4. That's what I am. Okay, that's what I'm on. So it works great on 10.4. I don't know, you know. What happened to Mac? More of the techies left Mac or something. And Octave is not, you know, as easy to work as it used to be. I don't know what the deal is.
Languishing.
Yeah, languishing. That's the problem. But I'm going to try and get over and see Dave Reeves. I'm going to see whether he's got an old copy of 10.5 or 10.6 that I can load on the Mac I have it up in my office and work on that a little bit. I worked with Kara a little bit last quarter, or actually, you know, I don't know, a couple, 3 hours trying to get the thing solved, and she had 10.5, and man, I just didn't, you know, I couldn't get it working on her machine, but, you know, I was, of course, stuck working on her machine, you know, when she was there working in my office. There wasn't a whole lot of time, you know, to really think about it. And sometimes these computer issues can be rather difficult, one of those deals. I discovered when I moved from Mac to Linux that the stuff like that, you know, like Octave, all this GNU programs, you know, they work so much easier on Linux than they did on Mac. I used to spend lots of time, you know, doing conversions, you know, from the ALSA audio to, you know, Core audio and all this stuff. And man, you know, it's just everything just is like easy on Linux. So I've become kind of spoiled, but I used to spend some time working on those problems, and I think that there's still some people out there that do that, so we ought to be able to find the answers on Google and get that working. It's important to me that it works on Macs, because so many people here have Macs, right? And it has worked just fine in the past.
I actually have Ubuntu on mine, so...
Yeah, well, if you have Ubuntu, it's really, really easy to do it there, but... Yeah, you know, I don't want to make you all install Ubuntu just to say you can run Octave. That's like,
why
you know,
would make them do it?
You would, yeah. I don't know. That feels like, you know, taking a, you know, a tank to slay an ant, right? It's like, hello, this is not good. So I'll be trying to, I'll see if I can get to Dave Reeves today. I was going to try and do that yesterday, but it was just absolutely too busy. There was just no time to get out over there and do that. Partly because I didn't answer all the questions I was going to answer in lecture that were on the lecture worksheet, so you guys had to come by one to get your answers. So I hope you all got that figured out. Anyway, so that's what we're going to do on Tuesday. So hopefully, you know, it's a little incentive to try and get things going. And, you know, if you don't have a laptop or if it's not working, don't worry, because we're going to get into groups of two. and you know, you can work with somebody on their laptop. So that's, it's not going to be the end of the world if it's not working, but I'd like to get it working on all of them. And I will go back and see if I can find that web page that I found before that had the best instructions about how to get GNUplot working. It's a problem with GNUplot, not with Octave. Actually, Octave works just fine. You can do the calculations and whatnot. It's just, but without being able to plot, that's like, oh, you know, that's no good. So
is the problem with X-Window or X11, or is it in terminal?
Well, actually, you can run GNUplot with X11. That's one way of doing it. Part of the problem is with Macs, there's like several ways of doing it. Most people prefer using, you know, the Cocoa framework, you know, the native Mac thing. And the other thing that happens is I'm finding, you know, most students don't have the developer tools, Xcode and whatnot, and don't know how to compile things on their laptop. And so what does that mean? Well, that means that somebody else has to provide a binary for you to install. And so that's also kind of like you have one arm tied behind your back, you know, you can't build the tools yourself. But there's a thing called AquaTerm, which is a plotting program that was basically kind of took over from GNUplot. But I think the last development on it happened back in about the time, you know, 10.4 was around. You know, it still works, at least once you do those tricks on 10.6. But 10.5 was a hard nut to crack. I didn't figure out what the deal was there. And 10.7 may or may not work. I don't know. Have you tried yet, Bryson? It didn't work for you?
I tried a bunch of different versions. I tried to compile it from source, too, and that didn't work. So.
Uh-huh, yeah. Right.
Took a long time.
Right. Well, I just need to get a, you know, a more update operating system, I guess, because then I can go figure out what the deal is. If I need to compile it from source, I can compile it for source and make a binary available, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
But the problem is it works just fine for me with the one I'm using, which is so old that it's not the one any of you guys are using anymore. So 10.7 may be a problem too, then, sounds like. So, yeah, who knows whether Dave will have one of those. Probably not. He won't have one of those he wants to give me, you know. Each OS is another couple $100, right?
Yeah.
I was hoping, since I'm way back at 10.4, he's upgraded some machine from 10. You know, 6 to 7 or something, and give me 6 or 5 or something.
7, I don't think you can get a physical medium of it. I think it's only a download.
Oh, really?
But
it's out now, right?
Yeah. You just have to go through like the App Store and download it.
Right. So he may not even have a CD. Or what happens when you upgrade your old version? Do you still have a license to the other one? Can you still download it? Like if you went to 10.8, of course that's not now, here now, but
mm-hmm.
could you then, you know, install 10.7 on another computer?
Mm-hmm.
It seems like you should be able
to. It's kind of weird because if you have a computer that has like 10.5 on it, you have to put 10.6 on it, and then
you have to put 10.7. You can't just go directly to 10.
Windows 7 is the same.
Oh,
XP,
man, how disgusting.
7.
Yeah.
I just went straight up to 7.
It takes a lot of XP.
Yeah, okay. Well, one of those deals.
You're an engineer, you do it the hard way, I think it's the easy way.
Right. Okay, so let's look at what we had done here before. First of all, last few days we talked about this function. We looked about a function as like a vector. You can kind of think about each little time as being the index for the dimension number. You know, like each time is the dimension number, okay, the name for the dimension, okay, kind of like the x coordinate, the y coordinate, or whatever, you know, all those kind of things. These things have names as numbers. The reason we kind of like that is because names as numbers are extendable to an infinite number of them, and you can just keep adding more and more on. That's better than our alphabet, you know. Okay, so we talked about that. I think hopefully that's kind of making sense. I'm hoping anyway. Then the next thing we were doing is we were looking at the reason we're trying to do this is we're trying to make use some tools that we had with the vectors that turned out to be really handy. on functions. And the thing that was really handy was sometimes it was easier to solve a problem in a different coordinate system. Okay, different coordinate systems could make problems extremely easy compared to how they were before. And so, how do you change coordinate systems? Well, we talked about that, and most of you guys have done a homework problem now where you rotated the coordinate system, right? And you found out that rotating the coordinate system, if you had a thing kind of like this, you had a vector, so this was x and this was y, you could rotate the coordinate systems by in matrix form by multiplying by a transformation matrix. I could call this T11, T12, T21, and T22, and these were like cosine, sine, minus sine, cosine, or something like that for that specific one we did, you know. And basically, a matrix multiply is, you know, a coordinate system transformation, okay? What it does is it rotates the reference frame and it scales things. It might scale the x-axis differently than the y-axis. This one that we did didn't scale anything, it just rotated, okay? But in general, multiplying by a matrix is a coordinate transformation, okay? And so this would have been the, you know, the new x prime, y prime. And then secondly, the next thing we did after that was we tried to give you a little bit of an idea that you could write this thing in a component by component form. Like, I could write this x prime as equal to t11x plus t12y, okay? And if I, instead of having x and y here, if I made this, I made this, say, v1 prime and v2 prime and called them by numbers, kind of like I did here, t11 and t12, t21, t22, and then x and y would be something like v1 and v2, then you could look at this, you could say, look at, this is v1 prime is equal to t11 times v1 plus t12 times v2, right? Which could be written like this. This is a nice summation notation. It looks like I'm going to make a dummy index here. I'm going to make this an n. N equals 1 to 2. And it looks to me like what's happening here is the second subscript here and that subscript are the same. So it's kind of like it would be T1n times Vn, like that. See, this V1 became a V2 there, right, in the second term. And in general, I could write this V sub L prime equals this summation. It would write as a summation here, and it would be n equals 1 to however many you got, I'll just say 2 in this case, and this would be TLNVN. Notice the second subscript here matches the subscript here. It's kind of like when you're doing matrix multiplication, you have to have, this is a 2 by 2, and this is a 2 by 1. And these two numbers have to be the same. Right? So the second number, the second subscript, must go with the first subscript. That's why this n and that n are the same there. Okay? And this thing is really just, this guy right here is just the lth line of this equation right here. This is really two equations. I had to write them out in matrix notation. I had to write them both out simultaneously, you know, the whole mess. But this guy is handier because you only have to write one thing. This essentially gives you the same information as this bigger picture up here. Okay? It's just a different notation. And this notation is very nice to generalize, okay? Works very nice to generalize. Are there questions about that?
Do you have to say that L goes from 1 to 2?
Well, in this case, L goes from 1 to 2 because there were 2 across this way. You know, here's the 1 and there's the 2, right? But we can generalize that. We could easily make this go for 100 by changing that 2 to 100. And then instead of writing, this would have been a gigantic matrix, couldn't even fit it on the board here, 100 by 100, right?
That 2 is for Yale.
Well, in this case, yes. It depends. There might be a matrix multiply instead of this being 2 by 2, or 100 by 100. Maybe this would be 500 by 100, okay? And this would be 100 by 1. And so then this L could range from 0 to 500, and this N would go 1 to 100. So it doesn't matter. You could, just like in matrices, you can have different dimensions. In this notation is identical to this, you can have different sizes. Now, generally when we're doing a transformation of coordinates like this, if there are two dimensions we start with, we also end up with two dimensions, right? I mean, like the picture here, right? Two to two, right? Otherwise, you have some problems there, right? And so generally, this L will have the same number of dimensions as this N right here, that the top number here, for what we're going to do. Okay, but it doesn't. This notation still works for whatever you want. I mean, however, whether it's the same or not, which would be matrices that weren't square. This guy wasn't a square matrix here. So what I'm saying is that this thing right here is another notation for writing just the lth element of this matrix equation. And it's so much shorter than this guy up here. I mean, with 2x2s, you can hardly tell the difference, right? But if I had 100 by 100, I could write it the same way, the same size right here, and the 100 by 100 would be bigger than the board would fit, right? Does that make sense? So I like this. And I'm trying to get you guys who are familiar with this and who are familiar with, the old I and J. It's only notation, nothing new, nothing. It's stuff you understand, okay? You just need to understand that this is a new way of writing it, okay?
So that's exactly like the homework, right?
Exactly so, like the homework, yeah.
So T11, that's like A1.
This is like A1.A1 hat. Which would be cosine theta or something, or I dot I prime.
Oh, okay.
But, that was just for the homework assignment. You could have another transformation that would be different something else, right? But, yeah. So, what I'm saying is this is just like the homework. See, this thing is just like that thing right there. This is what I was trying you to write, something like that in there, The thing right here would be a function of the two variables, L and N. This would be, this would be something sub NL. NL, because this variable right here has to be the second one, and this would be a something sub L, like this. Here, the way I did it here, I switched N and L from what I had here. Maybe I shouldn't do that, should I? Let me do that. I'm going to switch this back so it's the same as the notes, okay? So I'm going to make this, instead of N, I'm going to make this L, okay? L everywhere, then it'll match. It doesn't matter, it's a dummy index of summation, so. So what I want to change this to N. So this will be N, L, and L. Okay? So, does that make sense to you guys? Is that okay? I probably shouldn't use this board too much here, but I'm just kind of reviewing stuff over here. That's supposed to all be review. So anyway, we did this in the homework. And here's where we are today. We had this picture, this square wave here, right? This is like your homework problem today. And we said, we're thinking about functions like vectors. And, I could think of this square wave. If you just tell me every t what it is, like right here it's 0, and then it's 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, and then, goes back to 0 here, and then minus 1, minus 1, minus 1, minus 1, minus 1, and then goes back to 0, and 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, so on, right? So that's one way of looking at this thing. But I could perhaps make a new coordinate system instead of thinking about time, each knowing it at each specific time. What I would like to do is I would like to make this thing right here, this square wave up out of sine waves. And if I take a sine wave that goes up and down, kind of like the square wave does, there's the, you know, the first sine wave. This is kind of an approximation to that square wave, right? And then we looked at how we could make that approximation better by adding another sine wave on there that's going three times as fast. See, it still goes through zero right here. But right here, we need to make it go down some more because, you see, the sine wave wasn't, it was too low, I mean, too high. So I need to move it down here. So I add this guy on here, and it's going to make it better, right? And right here, it was too high, so I subtract off a little bit there, right? And right over here, I need to make it go down again and similarly all the way across, right? And so when I add this little green fast guy and that slow guy together, I'm getting something closer to that square wave. And so the idea is, could we actually take a whole string of them? You know, it looks to me like there was an infinite number of dimensions in the T reference frame, so there must be an infinite number of dimensions in the frequency reference frame too, right? In other words, when I went from two dimensions here, I went to two dimensions over here, right? So what I said was, well, it looks to me kind of like maybe I could add 1, 3, 5, 7, 9 and all these things with some amount of the sine waves, and I just kind of guessed it here by eyeball, right? How much I needed of each one. It looks like I need a lot of this one, a little of this one, and you know, things are getting closer, so probably the fifth one is going to be even smaller, right? And so on. So, but how much of each of these guys do we need? That's the question. And the idea we had was, we would use those ideas from vectors that we had before. We would kind of think of this guy right here, this sine of 2 pi n t over cap t, as like a basis vector, or basis, we'll call it a basis function, but it's like a basis vector. A basis vector is like the I, the j, the k, you know, one of those unit vectors. Now, you don't have to use unit vectors for basis vectors. In other words, you could have one guy that has his I, J, and K as unit vectors in the MKS system and another guy in the English system, right? And those two systems still work, right? And you could even use, you know, meters in the English system and it's still all the nice properties, you know, the orthogonalness and all that kind of stuff. Having one equation and one unknown to find out how much of each of these things you have here is still going to be okay. So that, you know, maybe these things aren't unit linked, but I'm hoping at least that they're orthogonal one to the other. Because when they were orthogonal, finding the B sub n's was not finding, you know, an infinite number of equations, an infinite number of unknowns, which we were, you know, hoping that wouldn't happen. Because, well, maybe we still got something. Let's look and see. There was another page here. Did we actually do that? Yeah, here we kind of did this. We did this thing with the vectors. Okay, so here was what we did. We said suppose B was equal to B sub n A sub n. This is like the B sub n. Those are like the signs. Okay, and we said, well, we're going to say that in our vector case, this A sub n dot A sub m was equal to 1 if they're the same vector and 0 otherwise. We made this notation delta m n, which is kind of like the identity matrix. It's 1 if m equals n and 0 otherwise. Okay, this is a quick way of saying, look, these vectors are orthonormal. In other words, they're orthogonal, 90 degrees to one another, and normal means they're unit length. Okay, now I don't know if those sine waves are orthogonal or if they're I do know they're orthogonal, and I do know whether they're normal or not, but we haven't found out or not yet, right? I mean, we need to check and see. We might hope that they are. So let's see what happens in the vectors. How do we find this B sub n? That's kind of like, how do we find the B sub n in the Fourier series, right? How do we find that? Well, Joe over there told us that all I have to do to find the component of V in the n direction was take the dot product with the A sub n unit vector, right? And if I wanted to find the component of V in the A sub m prime direction, I would take the dot product with the m prime unit vector. So suppose I wanted to find these V sub m primes and I knew these V sub n's. I'm kind of like thinking the V sub n's are kind of like the t's. I know them in the t coordinate system, and what I'd like to know is in the n coordinate system, in you know, the b sub n, the frequency coordinate system, what sine waves do I need, right? That's the new basis system. So what did I do here? I just took the dot product of both sides of this equation with the a n prime. This was the nth one of those guys. I just did it on both sides of the equation. I did it over here, there it is right there, and I had to do it right here. And then we use this property, a sub n, these two guys right here being orthogonal. We said that guy dot that guy was this delta mn. That's because the new coordinate system was still orthogonal. And when that happened, that made this thing right here, which was a bunch of equations and a bunch of unknowns, turn down to just the n prime element right here. In other words, when we sum this thing, we go m equals 1. Well, was n equals 1? If n was equal 1, I multiply by 1. Otherwise, I multiply by 0 because of this thing up here. In other words, the delta mn is 0 unless n equals m. So this thing decoupled that whole matrix equation. It's like this delta mn is it's an identity matrix. It took the equations that were all coupled together and made them all uncoupled. And so, you know, here's our transformation matrix. That's this T11, T12, T22, and so on. Those are the things right there. And in this case, they turned out to be the identity matrix, which just made our life easy. We did get indeed B sub n prime equal this dot product. In other words, all we have to do is take the inner product of the vector V with the unit vector in the prime coordinate system in the nth direction, and that'll give us the amount in the nth direction. And well, that makes sense. I mean, you know, that's what dot products are all about. The dot product is the projection of one vector on another. And if they're unit vector, if one of them's a unit vector, it's the exact projection. If they both have some length other than unity, then you get multiplied by the length of the other vector. In other words, remember, here's what I'm saying. I'm saying A dot B equals the magnitude of A times the magnitude of B times the cosine of theta. And here's your A, and here's your B. Oops. B. And here's your theta. And so, what does this say? This says I take, here's the A direction. I take this guy and find, so this is perpendicular here. That's this amount right here between here and here is the projection of B on the A direction, right? And then this says I have to multiply that by the length of A. Well, if A was unity, unit length, right, then it would just be the projection of one thing on another. In other words, dot products give you how much of this vector is in that direction. And if this guy happens to have a magnitude other than 1, it also makes it bigger by that amount. So that's what all we have to do is this dot product. So if we go back to this previous page here, all we have to do on this problem, if it's going to work, is we're going to take the inner product on both sides of this equation, just like we did with the vector. So I'm going to take the inner product of x of t with the mth basis function. Since I'm summing on n here, I want to do it with a different index. This is a dummy index. It's like a dummy variable of integration. I don't want to use it, you know, in some other place in my equation. I'll get it confused. You know, there's two meanings for it then, right? It's kind of like doing the integral of dx dx or something, you know. You do a double integral, you have two different variables of integration. Not a good idea to use the same one twice. You'll get confused on which one's which. So then we thought about how do we do the dot product with functions, and we thought about how do you do it. Well, let's see. Regular vectors, I take the x component times the x component plus the y component times the y component and keep going for all the components. So it's like a sum of a bunch of multiplies, right? Well, so I multiply the thing. I take the tth component of x times the tth component of this basis function here, right? And then I multiply the next t over, and I do that, and I add them all up. Well, that's just an integral, right? If it's a t is continuous. So this is what we'll do on both sides of the equation. So we did it on the left side here, and we wrote it on the right side here. So now we just need to work on this guy. See, I don't know how to do this guy until somebody tells me what x is. But over here, I know all the functions. I can actually work on that guy, right? So let me do that. So we have here the integral from minus t over 2 to t over 2, x of t, what is it, sine of 2 pi, what 2 pi what? M. T over cap t dt equals this summation. Now I can bring this summation outside the integral. So you can change the order of sums and integrals, right? I mean, it's just like a double sum. It's like you have a big array, kind of like this square matrix of stuff. I can add across this way first and then add the totals of that, or I could add this way right here and then add the totals on the bottom, right? So you can do the sum of the integral is the integral of the sum, right? Integral of a plus b is the integral of a plus the integral of b, right? Is that okay? So I'm just going to change the order. I'm going to put this n equals, what did I say, 1, 3, 5, dot, 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 to infinity. I've got the b sub n, because b sub n is not a function of t, I can pull him outside the integral, right? And then I have this integral, minus t over 2 to t over 2, and I've got sine of n pi t over cap t times sine of m pi t over cap t dt. Did I do that right? So I've got this sign times that sign dt. Oh, 2 n pi. Thank you. Yeah, there is a 2 in there. 2. So everybody with us? Are we okay?
So when you converted it to summation notation, you swapped your m for an n.
Yeah, I see. There was this n right here, right? This is a dummy index of summation, and I wanted to multiply not by, I can't multiply by the, if I multiplied by the nth one, which one is it? Is it the 1, the 3, the 5, the 7? I got to pick one. I'm going to pick a different one. I don't want to pick the n for the to be the label for the one I'm going to multiply. I'm multiplying by just one specific sine wave, okay? And I don't want to use n because n is already in this sum, and if I put n there, then all of a sudden it's changing every time the term changes. I don't want to do that. So I did. I multiplied by the mth one. Actually, unfortunately, over here, well, did I do that? Maybe it was on the last, when we were looking on the next slide here, I didn't use n, I probably did it the other way around or something. Here I was summing on n here, same way, right? And I did m, I multiplied by the, oh no, what did I do? No,
yes,
here I swapped them around, yeah. I'm sorry, I there's nothing sacred about it, I can't keep track, it's just a dummy variable, right? So anyway, I did it backwards over there, or I'm doing it backwards here. I'm not sure which one.
Yeah.
Okay. So we got to do this integral here, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Sine A, sine B. Do you guys remember a trig identity? Is this something like a half? I'm going to have to look this up. Anybody remember what the trig identity is? Okay, well, we've got Google, so we don't have to worry, right?
That's right.
Not on tests.
Yeah, I know. So we go trig identities. Yeah, trig identities. See, I've looked this up before. Here's one. Okay, let's see. What do we see here? I want sine A times sine B. And maybe it's down double. Let's go down further. It's down further. Here we go, down at the bottom here. Okay, sine U sine B is a half cosine U minus B minus cosine U plus B. Okay? So a half cosine of What did it say? Cosine of. I lost it already, man. U. Where is it? Right here. U minus V. U minus V. So U is. I guess cosine of U minus V is the same thing cosine of V minus U. It doesn't matter. So this would be sine of 2 pi n minus m, right? T over cap T, right? And then minus cosine of 2 pi n plus m cap T, little t over cap T, brackets, right? Is that okay? Now, let's think about this. This guy right here, what is this guy right here? This guy is a cosine wave with n plus n bumps, right? And we're integrating over one period of 0 minus t to t, and this has n plus n bumps in that period, exactly, right? So when I integrate this term right here, how much do I get? Zero, right, because all the ones upside down and the ones down below cancel out, right? It integrates to zero. In other words, half up, half down. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. Now this guy right here would also be integrating to zero, n minus m, right? If n minus m is anything but zero. If n minus m is zero, then I have a different situation, right? If n minus m is not zero, then it's going to be half up, half down, right? You agree? So I'm going to get zero from this guy no matter what, because both n and m are positive, right? So n minus m or n plus m can never be zero. But over here, I'm going to get something when n equals m, but nothing else, right? You agree?
So it's just a constant when you integrate it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. This would be a constant. The cosine of zero is one, right? If n and m are equal, right? If n and m are not equal, then whatever's up is the same as what's down, and I'm integrating over an integer number of periods, basically n minus m periods, right? So when I integrate this thing comes into, this becomes the summation, n equals 1, 3, 5, dot, 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 to infinity, b sub n, and then this guy becomes delta nm times the integral of 1 half from minus t over 2 to t over 2 dt. Did I do that right? Because you see cosine of 0 is 1, right? See, if, maybe I should make some little notes here. If n, m does not equal m, it looks like this. We integrate from here to here, you know, and the area is zero. You know, you got n minus m periods. This is n minus m or n plus m periods in minus t over 2 to t over 2, right? So it would the area would be zero in that case, right? If n equals m, it's a cosine of this guy will still integrate to zero, but then we will have the n plus m term integrates to zero. But the cosine of 2 pi n minus m t over cap t equals 1, right? And when you integrate 1 from here to here, you get capital T, right? Which so this becomes equal to the summation n equals 1, 3, dot, 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 to infinity of b sub n times delta sub nm times t, right? Notice this summation notation looks an awful lot like this dude over here, doesn't he? Huh. Oh, if I I forgot a 2, didn't I? Thank you. Yeah, I could pull that outside. In fact, this delta function is really easy to sum, remember? Let's see, we did this over here. Remember when we did this summation right here, we did the only one that survived was the nth term, right? You're multiplying by 0 every time except for the nth one. And so this guy really, really equals, it's t over 2. I can bring that out front. But then it's just b sub m. Oh, incredible. So this dude right here equals t over 2b sub m, right? So therefore, b sub m equals 2 over t, the integral from minus t over 2 to t over 2 of x of t, sine of 2 pi n m, t over cap t dt, right? Yes. That thing, I just take the equation, multiply by 2 over t on both sides. Then.
What does the m stand for again?
M is just the, I decided to, I decided to, when I was doing this thing over here. See, I could find these things one by one, kind of like, you pick the first one, like I did the first one right here. I found the first row of this equation, and then I could have done the second row and so on. But if I have an infinite number of rows, I'll be doing this all day, right? And so what I did was I picked the mth row, this guy right here, the mth one. I picked to do the dot product with the mth one. And its m could be 1 or 2 or 3 or whatever you want. In our case over here, m could be 1 or 3 or 5 or 7 or any number I wanted.
How did we get rid of the summation?
Well, we got rid of the summation because this delta mn is 0 unless m equals n. And so what happens is, start out with summing over n, right?
Yeah.
So we start out n equals 1. You first of all, you got to tell me what m I'm picking, right? So you pick an m. Maybe 3, okay? Suppose m was 3. Okay, well now I've got b sub 1 times delta sub 3, 1. What's delta sub 3, 1?
0.
So I got 0 for that term, forget it.
It only comes in
the third term, only the mth term.
Yeah.
So I only get the mth term here. Incredible, huh? So it took an infinite number of equations and an infinite number of unknowns and it turned it into something I could solve. Incredible. And I actually found this b sub m, and shoot, we're out of time, but what we need to do now is do this actual equation with the square wave in here, right? Not the square wave, but the one we had. And I guess I didn't make it as far as I wanted. But there you go. I need to just plug in that x of t. You guys know how to do that. Plug in this x of t and the sine formula here, right? You can do that on Wolfram if you like, right? And it'll just tell you what the answer is. Put in the sine wave. You'll have to break it into two integrals, right? It'll have to go from right here to right here, put in a minus 1. From right here to right here, put in a plus 1. This is t over 2, that's minus t over 2, right? And so break it into this integral plus that integral, right? It'll give you a number for b sub m, right? Then you take that b sub m and you plug it back into this formula right here. And you plot it. We'll plot it and see if it actually looks like that square wave when we add them all up, right? We can't do forever, but we could do 100 terms or something, especially with octave, right? So we'll see if it works. So anyway, sorry I didn't make as many tracks as I needed to here. You guys are going to have to figure out that lecture worksheet a little bit on your own again. Yeah, I'll be around for a while.
Okay, so the N stands for the number of
bumps. Number of bumps, yeah,
like
on the sine wave.
Lower and upper, or?
No, just number of cycles.
Okay.
So there's two bumps per cycle and a one up, one down, right?
And the M stands for?
M stands for the specific one that I'm looking for. I'm looking for the mp beat. See this B right here? I want to find the mp one. I want to find the one that's where N equals M. I want the mp one, not the this is the mp one right here, and I sum this to get that. But I want to know what each one of those are, right? So I'm going to pick a general one, the mp one, and that's the one I'm going to solve for.
The mp one is like
a specific one, right?
So like this one.
Yeah, that would be m equals 1 or 3. So you put in m equals 1, you'll get the amount of this one. M equals 3, you'll get the amount of that one.
And only 3.
And we 5, 7, whatever. We're putting in a lot of terms here, you know, so you can pick.
He said only.
Well, if I picked M was 3, then I would only on this term when I did this summation here, delta MN is 0 unless M equals N. So I'd get 0 plus 0 plus 0. Finally, when I hit the third term, I'd get something here.
Okay.
See, what I'm saying is when you integrate these sine functions, it's like they're orthogonal, if you think about it here, because this is like the inner product of this sine function with that sine function. And when you get 0 for an inner product, that means the two vectors are orthogonal. So what that means is this vector, this unit vector, it's not unit long, actually, because we came up with t over 2 when we did this thing. It ended up as t over 2 delta mn, so that means they're squared of t over 2 long. Generally, when you take a vector, a dot product with a vector with itself, you get its length squared. Mm. And we got t over 2. I mean, right here, this right here was what we got for that integral. That thing. So it says t over 2 delta mn. And now delta mn tells you they're orthogonal. Unless m equals n, you get 0. But when they're the m equals n, then I get a t over 2, which means each of them had a length of squared of t over 2. Which, you know, that's okay. Doesn't matter. Is it going to fit? I guess I got to back up.
Question, when you integrate that thing down there,
mm-hmm.
What do you do with the m?
You're going to get a different number for every m. You better hope to, right?
Oh, okay. I guess it's going to be.
It's a function of m, yeah. It will be a function of m because there's, you know, you remember the big one, the first one, m equals 1, was big, right?
Yeah.
Next one's a little smaller. If they're all the same size, oh dear, I don't think we'll end up with a square wave.
So for the homework due Monday, I guess, should we just do a little lab again?
Yeah, that's fine. Mm-hmm. You can also do this if you go to FWeb. I have on FWeb, it's not the most super thing, but it actually is a web interface to Octave.
Oh, really?
So you can, you know, kind of like Wolfram Alpha, you can type in your Octave code right there on FWeb.
Okay.
And, you know, it will do your plots or whatever for you, you know. So it's fweb.wallawalla.edu.
Okay.
So. Oh, and I guess I need this picture too, huh? Any progress on the tutorial, Greg?
Some. Enough to do this.
Yeah. So, what are you doing? Numerical and save?
Numerical. numericals, another file like
mm-hmm.
this.
Yeah, right.
That calls up to another place in the computer.
So are you plotting it? I guess this is your plot over here, or that was the one you had before or something?
Yep, this is the plot.
Mm-hmm.
And I can do this. Go save.
Yeah,
as.
Sure. It is a PNG or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's cool.
So, I'm going from the 1/2 cosine line down to the sum bn dnm.
Mm-hmm.
You got the dnm or part 1m, whatever you
delta
want to call
mn,
that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because since it's going to infinity, it's either going to be a 0 or a 1. Or
what's going to happen is if n does not equal m, it's always going to integrate to 0.
Uh-huh.
Okay? And so delta mn basically says if n does not equal m, it equals 0. Okay? Now the delta mn equals 1 when n equals m. Okay?
Right.
Now when n equals m, we had to figure out what it was. And so we put in when n equals m, the second cosine integrated to 0. But the first cosine, when n equals m, cosine of 0 is 1, right?
Okay.
And so I just plugged in 1 and times the 1/2 there,
mm-hmm.
and I integrated from minus t over 2 to t over 2, and I ended up with that cap t over 2 for that integral. And so then, you know, the summation, we went through all the terms, and only the m term survived, so we ended up with t over 2 bm, and finally. And, you know, I suggest you sit down and actually, you know, you can integrate it out, right? And
mm-hmm.
It will turn out that way. I mean, I'm trying to make it so that we don't end up doing a bunch of boring algebra
right.
in class. So I'm trying to argue other ways that, oh, look, this is going to turn out that way. But,
right.
you know, when you have doubts about something, don't hesitate to do it all out in every bit of its gory detail, and it will come out, you know, it will come out. But then, of course, go back and try and understand how you could see it this other way and see, oh, look, you know, I should have seen that, you know.
Okay.
So I'm trying to minimize the algebra because in general, yeah, people don't like tedious algebra.
On the homework, were we supposed to assume that these are
perpendicular. Yes, yes,
okay.
yes.
That was another
yeah,
thing
right.
I was
mm-hmm. yeah, no. yeah, I tried to draw them so they look that way. My pictures are not the greatest. And you can, if they're not perpendicular, you can still do it with two dimensions, but you have to solve two equations and two unknowns. You don't get this delta mn thing happening here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here, because the sines were perpendicular, we got that delta mn. But when they're not, then you just get two equations and two unknowns, or in this case, an infinite number of equations, infinite number of unknowns, and in this case, I'd be toast. Over on the, you know, this thing right here, two equations, two unknowns, I can still do that. But it's a pain. You know, I mean, it's not as nice as this.
Right.
So that's the benefit of orthogonal coordinate systems. And then it makes you think, well, cool, sines turned out to be orthogonal. What else might be orthogonal, right? And you've looked at some other series kind of things, like maybe Taylor series. Is x orthogonal from x squared? Well, actually, x is orthogonal to x squared if you integrate over minus infinity to plus infinity or minus a to plus a. But x is not orthogonal to x cubed. So, you know, the Taylor series is not one of these orthogonal kind of series.
Okay.
So, anyway. Drake.